Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
12:03, you made it to Friday afternoon, September 26th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. The Chicago City Council has given the thumbs up to the Fire's new stadium in the South Loop. We'll cover that in our next segment. But first, inflation holds steady as trade tensions from drug pricing to soybeans escalate. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Diane Swank, Chief Economist, KPMG in Chicago. Diane, thank you for joining us today. And of course, the big story is the Personal Consumption Expenditures Report, the PCE, which is the Fed's preferred inflation gauge because it's a little more robust compared to the Consumer Price Index and the Producer Price Index. But core inflation per the PCE, 2.9%, the annual rate in August. That was in line with expectations. And what does that mean? Not only to the Fed, but just to those of us who keep our eyes on the economy.
Well, the most important thing is that, unfortunately, the bulk of the effects of tariffs are still ahead of us. And underlying that number, we also saw service sector prices pick up. Now, goods prices on a lot of goods went up at their fastest pace on record during the month, and those are the most susceptible to tariffs, even though the overall index held at the 2.9% core rate that we saw last month. We now saw another round of tariffs that got announced, and it takes 6 to 18 months for the full effects of tariffs to work their way through the economy, on top of the fact that we had all that front running out there to help dampen the initial blow. And many of the tariffs that we saw levied were not even levied until August, and those are just starting to work their way into the economy. So the good news is consumers keep spending. They don't feel so great about it, and that's because the spending is coming from the top 20% of households dominating spending, while the bottom 80% has actually stagnated. Income and wealth inequalities have worsened to their worst on record since the 1980s and 1970s. Some estimates suggest they're at the worst that they've been since the 1920s, and that's part of the reason why you can have an economy that looks like it's moving forward, and it still is, but it's carried by so few households that the majority of Americans still are very discontent with what's happening.
The tariff wars continue, and the latest one, 100% tariffs on branded patented drugs unless firms build plants locally, according to the White House. And then the other side of the coin, and this is something that's happening in the agricultural space, and that is the back and forth between the U.S. and China over tariffs has really slammed the brakes on soybean growers. Yep. China bought nearly $13 billion in soybeans last year. That number is now zero. What does that mean for American farmers, besides the obvious?
Well, it really is hard on American farmers. And what's happening is Brazil is picking up many of those soybean purchases. And so we now have a 50% tariff on about half of things coming in from Brazil. But it includes coffee, which anyone who drinks coffee like I do, that is really hard because there was already a bad coffee harvest this year. And so we had double-digit gains before we got those 50% tariffs, which kicked in August. And in fact, in the month of August, it was up 20.9%. We have seen the president talk about trying to use tariff revenues to offset the pain for farmers, but then there's other issues. I mean, you can't use tariff revenues for everything. Is it going to be deficit reducing? Is it going to help offset other tax cuts? Or is it going to be spent on subsidies for farmers that are now cut out because of the trade tensions that we're seeing? And so that is a lot of things going on. And whenever you use one blunt tool for so many outcomes, the risk is the risk of unintended consequences. And that is part of what we're worried about seeing moving forward. And, you know, for some of these farmers, they're losing, they've lost some contracts for good from the first trade war that we had back in 2018 and 2019 with China.
Diane Swonk, Chief Economist, KPMG in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Coming up, the development of the South Loop receives a huge boost.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The City Council has approved a $750 million Chicago Fire Soccer Stadium at the 78 in the South Loop. Joining us with the latest is Danny Ecker, reporter for Crane Chicago Business. Danny, thank you for joining us today. The first lesson to be learned from this, given the speed at which this proposal has gone from idea to approval, is that spending your own money, as the owner of the Chicago Fire is, to build this stadium, really is the shortest distance between two points.
Absolutely. I mean, you couldn't really have picked a better time or a better backdrop for Joe Mansueto to be coming to the market and saying, I'd like to finance my own stadium. Thank you very much. And, you know, never mind what the Bears and the White Sox have been asking for their own stadium. So, yeah, I mean, it's a big deal. And certainly that's been something where right now downtown certainly could use that kind of investment. And you've got, I think in many cases, a lot of city officials that are just saying, hey, how fast can we sign off on this with the proper feedback from the community, but understanding that it's a big asset, not just to the South Loop neighborhood, but, you know, potentially to the city if this really spurs a broader entertainment district at the 78 in the South Loop.
Now, a lot of people have had a lot of ideas about what to do with this land, which has essentially been empty since the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad closed Grand Central Station in 1969. I mean, this is vacant land near downtown Chicago at Clark and Roosevelt. And so you do have the soccer stadium going in. It will be the anchor tenant for whatever happens next with this development from Related Midwest. The thorny issue, though, above and beyond just using private financing to build the stadium, is who's responsible for the infrastructure around the stadium? Do you spend public money or TIF money to put in a CTA station and just increase the public access to this land?
Right. So that was the big issue that was quite controversial in the waning days of Rahm Emanuel's administration in 2019, when Related Midwest, the developer that controls the 78, won approval for $550 million in TIF money that would be used to, you know, build new roads and, you know, shore up the seawall and other things that were going to be pieces, you know, realigning the metro tracks running through the site, large line items that were going to be saying, hey, these are public infrastructure pieces. The controversy, of course, was the use of public money, but the structure here is, you know, Related and, you know, in this case, the Fire, but merely the Related is footing the bill for any of these infrastructure projects that would be happening up front. And then they'd be paid back with property tax gains that would happen at the 78 over time. But it's still public money, and that's part of this redevelopment agreement that's still being ironed out. So while this city council approval for the rezoning to allow the stadium is certainly a big milestone, there's still a hurdle to clear here to get city council on board for, you know, providing certain amounts of money that we're going to support the infrastructure that are going to boost this site.
Now, 2 years ago, the White Sox shared renderings of what their stadium would look like in the 78. Are the Sox basically boxed out of that piece of land now based on the Fire's investment? Or is there a possibility that maybe there could be two sports facilities on this land by the time it's all said and done?
It's a really good and important question, really, for this site, because Related Midwest has not precluded the idea of continuing to pursue the White Sox and making this a two-stadium development over time. the Fire have not shut the door on that prospect. You know, obviously in other cities you have multiple stadiums that are very close to each other and make a little bit of a sports and entertainment district. Right now, all you have is the third ward alderman, Pat Dowell, saying she would not support a second stadium. But she also created a path in case there was going to be another stadium in the future, saying, well, look, if there were a second stadium, someone would have to come and get approval separately from the plan commission and city council then. So in theory, it could fit. And I just wouldn't count out that story is not done. Certainly, there's a lot of moving pieces for the White Sox moving forward, whether they're going to stay in Bridgeport or move somewhere else, be it the 78 or another location.
Danny Ecker, reporter, Crane Chicago Business. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, ID theft isn't just for adults. We'll tell you how you can protect yourself and your kids.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Identity theft is a growing problem for everyone, even children, and many parents don't realize their kids are also prime targets for scammers. We welcome in Steve Burness, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Chicago and Northwest Indiana. Steve, thank you for joining us today. And this is an identity theft issue that you may not realize you're a victim or that your kids are a victim until many years after the fact.
That is correct, Bob. Rob, thanks for having me today as well. It affects millions of Americans each year, really costing Americans billions of dollars. It affects consumers. It affects parents. It affects children. I think parents don't realize that their children's identity can be stolen. So it's important for them to get their annual credit report, just like you should get it yourself, at least once a year, but more is better. And it's free now at no cost. But that's usually the first indication that you're a victim of identity theft.
And when we really say it, it's too late to find out that you've been the victim of identity theft, is that someone, a scammer, could use your child's social security number now because they're 4 or 5 or 6 years old and they have no credit and a sparkling credit record as a result. And maybe you'll find out a decade later when you're actually trying to take out a loan in their name, maybe for school or something like that, that they've had all sorts of stuff put on that social security number and you just didn't know about it.
Exactly. That happens all the time. I think the sooner you find out you're a victim of identity theft, the easier it is to correct it. Sometimes it takes 3, 4, or 5 years to fix a problem as well. But I think consumers need to take preventative maintenance and looking at their identity, the credit report rather, to determine if they are a victim in any way and look for unusual emails or accounts being opened and things of that nature. I think people have to be more proactive than reactive, and especially this type of crime.
Well, it seems like the first thing that you can do is freeze your child's credit with the 3 major credit bureaus so someone can't take out stuff in their name.
We suggest all consumers freeze their credit files as well with all 3 agencies, including children as well. This gives an extra layer of protection. Again, it's not a guarantee of protection against identity theft, but it's the first way of doing it. And it's free, and you can unfreeze it at any time and refreeze it, and it doesn't cost anything like it did in the past. And everybody should be doing that to prevent identity theft.
And then some other things, share your children's personal data only when necessary, and then keep social security cards and birth certificates secure. So in other words, all that stuff, generally there are hard copies, and just keep that in a file cabinet or a safe at home, because you rarely are asked to provide that information online when they are young.
Correct, exactly. Keep everything locked up. Don't give personal information to anybody unless they need it, and there has to be a reason why. And we're always concerned about anybody calling you out of the blue, and that's usually the tip-off to the rip-off, is when they call you out of the blue saying they need personal information. Really, social engineering, really manipulating you in some way, in an email or a post or whatever, to divulge information. And that is a big way that the identity thieves steal your identity doing that. So keep it locked away. Don't give it to freely, especially if somebody calls you out of the blue.
And then, of course, as your kids get older, they may have bank accounts and prepaid debit cards. What's a conversation you should have with your kids the older they get so they can begin and then maintain these safe habits?
What happens all the time is it's not taught well in school about how to protect yourself, or that sometimes the consumer issues. It's important for parents to educate especially your children, about the repercussions of doing things online, giving out information online, sharing your credit card information with your roommates in college or whatever it may be. They got to be just as protective of your child's ID as well as yours. And they're not taught this in schools. So it's important to give them this financial information and make sure that it can happen to you. And there's lots of resources the Better Business Bureau has and the Federal Trade Commission has to prevent this from happening to you by researching it and looking online and getting this information ahead of time to help educate everybody.
Steve Burness, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau in Chicago. And of course, we'll go in depth on the world of flim-flam, scoot and scam, and how you can protect yourself on At Issue this weekend. You can hear it Sunday morning at 9:30 a.m. and again at 9:30 p.m.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. Markets are higher today. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Ryan Dietrich, Chief Market Strategist with the Carson Group in Omaha, Nebraska. Ryan, thank you for joining us today. The markets are all up nearly 1% in the case of the Dow. And is this a sigh of relief at the inflation report this morning?
I think so, Rob. Happy Friday, everybody. You know, that number right as about expected. It wasn't like too hot. It wasn't too cold. After down 3 days in a row in the middle of this week, it really does seem kind of like just a little bit of a relief rally. We're obviously, last time I knew, at the end of September. So you sometimes get some end-of-month markups, end-of-quarter markups. But the reality is, hey, it's a nice way to end up. It's still probably going to be a down week, but you know what? You can't go up every week. Still a nice end to the week, though.
And then what does this say, though, about the possibility of more interest rate cuts in the future? Because there are two strains of thought here. I mean, there's one, there's the idea that you need to cut interest rates to prevent further deterioration in the labor market. And yet we're getting more and more numbers that suggest that the labor market is at the very least solid and may not be deteriorating. It's just stuck. And does that require more interest rates? And also the GDP report that came out, the revised second quarter GDP report that came out yesterday, also indicates this is an economy that's still very robust.
You're right. I mean, that GDP report came in much better than expected, you know, like 3.8% or so, 3.7% around there, which is really solid. It was negative in the first quarter. And you're right, the initial jobless claims, weekly initial jobless claims, they dropped big time the last 2 weeks. So the labor market, it does show some cracks. I mean, today's data does very little. I mean, Jerome Powell's made it clear. I think people expect probably two more cuts. It's not like Fed funds futures, it's kind of a mouthful for a Friday afternoon, has really changed all that much just today. We still think it makes sense. We probably will get two cuts here. The labor market, again, it's not greatly deteriorating, but there are some clear cracks in our opinion. And again, I don't think Powell wants to throw too big of a curveball at the market. We'll probably see two more cuts the rest of this year. And I think that's justified. I mean, the labor market, again, it's okay, yes, but nonetheless, we'll get next week. I mean, next week is the monthly jobs number, and we know we've had some wild moves in that the last couple months, so we'll be anxious to see what happens a week from today when we get that new jobs number.
Because it seems like, as far as the jobs market is concerned, especially with the report on first-time unemployment benefits, we had a very low number yesterday, and that once again we're maybe in this stuck in this no hire but no fire pattern that everyone's just content with what they got.
You're exactly right. I mean, that is very true, because in a weak labor market, well, you're going to see layoffs. You're going to see things like that, even quits to a degree. I mean, people aren't quitting. They're not necessarily getting laid off either. Now, there are some of each of those, yes. But the reality, like you said, this stage of the economic cycle, I mean, everybody wanted to leave and get a new job, did it in 22, 23 for the most part. And now it's just kind of like we're kind of meandering. But again, you know, we had clearly the big shock with the tariffs earlier this spring, early summer. That likely played a big part into the volatility we saw in the big monthly jobs revisions. I remember what we saw a couple months ago. So again, that's why we're just getting our popcorn ready, getting ready for Friday to see. I think the labor market might be coming back a little bit. We're going to see that probably coming up next week.
And then very quickly, Ryan, we do have a little bit of a bounce back from the NASDAQ, not by much in the grand scheme of things, but it seems like some of that AI anxiety about just where we're going with this seems to have run its course.
Yeah, at least for the day it has. You're right. I mean, we know large cap technology, AI, clearly been the big, quantum computing has gotten really hot again. Been the big story. We still like those areas. Maybe they got a little bit ahead of themselves. Perfectly normal after the rally we've seen off those April lows. We still expect a strong fourth quarter from those areas. But hey, they're the leaders. Sometimes they lead on the way up and the way down. I think it's just important to remember that.
Ryan Dietrich, Chief Market Strategist with the Carson Group in Omaha, Nebraska. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, an Entrepreneur Friday, celebrating two decades of wood-fired pizza success.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Entrepreneur Friday. Chicago area-based family-owned restaurant group Billy Bricks marks 20 years now with 7 locations, pizza trucks, and Moo Joe's Ice Cream. We welcome in Rick Gruber, the CEO of the Billy Bricks Restaurant Group in Lombard. Rick, thank you for joining us today. And it takes a long time and a lot of work to go from owning just one restaurant and getting it off the ground to opening a group. So reflect on that journey for us.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Rob. Thanks for having me. They say it's 20 years for an overnight success, and that's how it feels. Sometimes, you know, very early on, it's 24/7, right? It's 7 days a week, open to close, taking home very little money when you're paying off those first loans that you have to open up the first shop, just hoping you're going to make it. And over time, you get the second one, you get the third one, and then things change again. So every time you hit these new sort of inflection points in the business, it feels like you're running a completely different business. And I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges as we reflect back, is every next step comes with new challenges and new requirements of all of us that are involved.
And then Chicago and the suburbs, it's such a competitive pizza market between local favorites and national chains. There's just so many pizza places vying for the public's attention. So how did you enter this marketplace, and what was the original hook that you felt made it unique?
So 20 years ago, most people thought the founder, Bill, my stepdad, was crazy for even trying to open up some new style or new kind of pizza here in Chicago, because it is so competitive, and it is a very pizza loving town, right? And there's a unique style to Chicagoland area. So when he brought that in, it was open kitchen, fast casual cafe atmosphere with a wood fired oven. Nobody was doing any of those things yet. Chipotle hadn't even left Colorado. So when you think about that, the entire concept was strange for the time, and I think that was the differentiator. We were bringing an incredibly unique style of pizza served in a way that people had not been used to, and the uniqueness and sort of kitschiness to it was the hook, but what really kept people was the quality of our food. And while our pizza has evolved over time and gotten better and better every single year, our sandwiches and salads have been things that have kept people coming back for 20 years as well.
And then operationally speaking, you know, what is the difference, not only from a dollars and cents standpoint, but from a workflow standpoint, having a brick oven wood-fired pizza versus one that's cooked in a conventional pizza oven?
So our motto, or sort of our slogan for this year's 20th anniversary campaign in this past year, has been real people, real food, real fast. So where a lot of people now are going towards automations and more equipment-based work, we have to spend a lot of training time into our people. We value them a lot, and we invest a lot into them because it's not as simple as just flinging it into that old deck oven and set the timer. You know what I mean? You have to have a craft from start to finish between knowing how to make dough, how to stretch dough, how to top these particular types of pizza, and then how to work and manage a 900 to 1,000 degree oven. So I think that's what's always amazed people is the uniqueness and the skill and craft that goes into making our style of pizza. And it is incredibly fast. You're talking 2 to 4 minutes, depending on the size of our pie, to come out of the oven fresh. And that's a pretty amazing thing.
And then when you're done with your pizza, it's always time for dessert. Top it off with some ice cream. When did Moo Joe's ice cream enter the equation?
So about 3 years ago, we had this idea to add to our pizza truck fleet an ice cream truck to the fleet. And so that's where it started. And we started going backwards and retrofitting our existing locations to add the ice cream shops inside of them in various sizes. And it's just the perfect proverbial cherry on top to every event as well as to the store, because you can't really get any better, especially for our target demographic, than pizza and ice cream. You know, I'm going to be 40 this year. I have 3 young kids. We're the exact demographic that comes into Billy Bricks in droves and that we look for. And I know there's nothing that makes my kids happier than cheese pizza and then a scoop of Blue Moon or Superman ice cream.
Yeah, that really is that really is the truth, Rick. That's not necessarily a controversial take. Rick Gruber, CEO of the Billy Bricks Restaurant Group in Lombard, thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Still to come, a retail chain is adding Christmas to its pop-up store lineup.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Spirit Halloween is getting in on the Christmas game as it expands into the holiday space across the Chicago area. Joining us with the details is Bob Fibb, CEO of The Retail Doctor, based in New York. Bob, thank you for joining us today. And this is a brilliant idea. When I saw this, I was stunned that they didn't come up with this idea like 6 or 7 years ago. So does this mean that existing Spirit Halloween locations will just tick over into a Spirit Christmas location, for lack of a better word, providing a few more months of rental income to all those former Kmarts and CVSs and Walgreens out there?
Ho, ho, ho. Absolutely. Well, let's be serious. This was a pilot they started out with last year for about 8 stores, and now it's going to be expanded to 30, and I think 3 of them are going to be right around you in Chicago. But it's the first thing when you said that is, yeah, haven't they always been doing that? And then you say, well, why haven't they been doing that? So it's really kind of a funny moment. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. And I guess they're going to have an immersive Peppermint Village and all kinds of apparel and decorations and gifts. So that's a big space to compete in. And I'm not sure the drive is as great to get that Halloween costume. Maybe you'll have Halloween mixed with Christmas. Maybe it'll be that Bad Santa kind of. They could have everything in those big stores, you know?
Well, you could have the Nightmare Before Christmas, but that's probably copyrighted and therefore outside of the Spirit Halloween slash Christmas business model. But there are stores that do sell Christmas and holiday-related merchandise year-round. If you go to Disney World, there are at least several places where it could be 25 million degrees in July, and you can go into the Christmas store and get your Disney-themed Christmas ornament for the following December. But Halloween, there are lots of costumes. There are lots of just off-brand costumes that you can get that are cheap to make and cheap to buy. How does the merchandise mix change when you flip over from Halloween into Christmas?
Well, the interesting thing is you pretty much have to open a whole nother store. So everything you had before has to go into storage. And the nice thing about Halloween is it doesn't go bad. And technically, neither does Christmas. So as long as you've got the warehouses for everything, that's great. But the wild card on all of this is, what is the tariff going to be, particularly for the holidays? No one is clear. And a lot of retailers have bought an awful lot of merchandise in early. And they are hoping that they will not end up regretting the day that they spent that extra money on tariffs if they are challenged and go away in court.
Now, when we talk about tariffs and the impact on Christmas decorations, I would imagine it's probably a big, very wide category. But speaking entirely from a self-interested perspective, Bob, how are tariffs going to affect outdoor decorations, particularly lights, especially once you pull them out of the attic and you discover that half of them don't work?
Well, that's a great point, because it all comes from China, and the 50% tariff is there. People are saying that there are shortages already in several categories, and that's only going to be getting worse. So I think it's going to be retailer by retailer, and some of the big ones that you would think, oh, they're going to have everything like they used to, maybe not this year.
Good luck. Bob Phibb, CEO of The Retail Doctor in New York. Thank you for joining us today.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly outside of Cleveland, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.